I don't know about you, but I do enjoy like a nice fire, like a campfire, a fireplace, all that kind of stuff. I really enjoy being around a fire, and I find fire, even as a kid, very fascinating. Like, not in a, you know, criminal sort of way, but I just find fire fascinating because it's something that's very useful to us, isn't it? It creates energy. It can boil water. It can roast marshmallows or hot dogs. All those things that we can really do. And I found fire fascinating right from the time I was in like just a kid at camp. I would go to an all boys camp, and my dad was one of the counselors at that camp, and it was his job to teach, I think it was called fire safety, but he changed the name to fire building because it wasn't necessarily about safety. And it was one of those situations where, you know, sometimes you have this little adventure with your dad and then he says, "Don't tell your mom." It was kind of one of those incidences where it's like, that was kind of fun. And my friends all thought, my cool campers all thought, "Man, your dad is cool. Just the way he helps us to build fires." And my dad was cool. And I remember that we would learn how to build a fire, and we would learn, you know, in the more primitive ways, like find the moss that are not like kind of that stuff that grows on trees. And it's kind of like that mossy stuff. We called it old man's beard. And it's just highly flammable, and it works really well to start a fire. And then you put some kindling on and all that kind of stuff. And then we would have like the side show of learning, which we always had these matches that were called Lucky Strike. Do you know those matches? Like, normally we have safety matches, and those are the ones that you can only light on the matchbox. But Lucky Strike, you can light that thing on carpet. It's just any sort of friction on these things would help it to start. And I think what it had was it had a little white cap on the end of it, and that's how you know it's a Lucky Strike. I'm pretty sure it was gunpowder, because literally you can use your thumbnail and start this thing, and they were just so much fun. So what we would do. This was fire building exercise. Was we would take our knives, because it was also whittling, and we would take our knives and we would cut the end off, and then we put them in a nice neat little pile on a stump, and then we would take the axe and use the blunt end of the axe and hit the Lucky Strike match heads, and it made a really fun loud noise, like a gunshot almost. And it was just this way of, see, this is the thing. Kids, don't do this. If your kid's in here, this is against fire safety. If it says Lucky Strike, don't buy it because they're not safe. And don't do things like this. This was a controlled environment with professionals. And so learning how to light a fire and learning also the dangers of fire was really important. Sometimes learning the dangers of fire by taking risks with fire is what we would learn. But what we did learn was how to have a fire in a controlled environment. We also learned how to build bigger and hotter fires together using other things and experimenting things with, you know, fuel and diesel fuel, gasoline, and how they would ignite stuff. It became a very informative science experiment in that time. And what it did was it helped us to learn and helped us actually to learn the respect of fire, to respect the heat, to respect the dangers of fire, and how to make sure that it doesn't spread beyond the fire pit, but stays within the fire pit. So we have a little bit of fun, a little bit of guy experience and adventure, but also to be able to do it in a way that we don't hurt others. Although I don't recommend some of the things that we did, but also to be able to do it in a way that's a controlled environment. And we understood how hot that fire could get to be able to not to put your fingers close enough, but not too close to be able to get burned. So today we're learning about the Sunday school story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and how they were put in a very, very dangerous, hot, fiery furnace. And they were ended up there because of their faithfulness to God and their willingness to stand up in the face of persecution, stand up to not compromise their beliefs and what they believed and what they stood for and their faith and their God. And because they did that, they ended up in this hot, fiery furnace. And sometimes there is a cost to maintaining our faithfulness, is essentially the lesson we'll learn today. So we're going to look at Daniel chapter 3, and we're going to look at the whole chapter, actually. It's 30 verses, but I think we can handle it this morning. And we're going to talk about how Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were faithful to God and how God came through for them in the midst of their faithfulness and spared their lives. So King Nebuchadnezzar, in verse 1, it says, made an image of gold, 60 cubits high and 6 cubits wide. And he set it up on the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. He then summoned the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other provincial officials to come to the dedication of the image he had set up. So the satraps, prefects, governors, advisors, treasurers, judges, magistrates, and all the other, he could have said that much more efficiently, right? But he didn't. All the other provincial officials to come to the dedication of the image he had set up. And so they did that, and they assembled for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up, and they stood before it. Then the herald loudly proclaimed, nations and peoples of every language, this is what you are commanded to do. As soon as you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipe, and all kinds of music, you must fall down and worship the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar has set up. Whoever does not fall down and worship will immediately be thrown into a blazing furnace. Therefore, as soon as they heard the sound of the horn, flute, zither? I don't know how to pronounce that. I didn't really practice that. Lyre, harp, and all kinds of music. Who even knows what that is? Maybe it's a xylophone. All the nations and peoples of every language fell down and worshiped the image of gold that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. So here is a problem for Daniel and his friends. And the problem is obvious, that worshiping an idol is way beyond the line of what godly men can do. And they will not cross that line. And so for Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, their names were changed in order to fit within that society. And they're like, you know what, you can take my name and you can't take my identity. You can't take away my faith. And we can live in the home that you provide, and we can eat the vegetables, but not the meat that you provide. And we can serve the king, and we'll do it with respect, and we'll do it to the best of our abilities, and we'll do a really good job and work very hard. But this we cannot do. And the idol of that time was that Daniel and his friends went along with a lot of things, but now the thing that they wanted Daniel and his friends to do violated the first commandment of the Ten Commandments. It's number one. I am the Lord your God. Don't have any other gods before me. That's the first commandment. And so that's something that they could not forget, because it's the most important one. God is God, and no other God is God, and I should not worship any other God. And I think sometimes we need to think within our lives, is there anything that I'm putting ahead of God? Is there anything I'm putting ahead of God? Because there have been idols in society that people essentially worship or give worth above God throughout all generations. And that was the idol of that place in that time. But I think sometimes we need to ask ourselves, what is the idol of my time? What is the idol that I'm tempted to put ahead of God, that I'm tempted to worship with my time, with my focus, with my loyalty? What motivates me within life? And I think sometimes we need to just ask ourselves, okay, hold on. What are the idols of my time? Okay, am I giving them more worth than I should? Am I giving them more time than I should? And usually the idol does not look like some kind of gold statue, because that would be way too obvious. And that works in certain contexts. It works in certain cultures, but it doesn't necessarily work in our culture, does it? Because that would just be too blatant. And we'd be like, I don't want to follow that. That's just weird. Why would I worship some golden idol? I don't even like gold, right? I like silver, whatever, right? But it's not about the material of it, but it's about something that is ahead of God. And in our lives, we have these things, these habits, these addictions, these focuses that we have within our lives that take our focus away from God. Now, it's not that we can focus on God 24/7 because we're human and we have limitations. We have all sorts of other responsibilities and things that happen within our lives. But at the same time, there are things that when all of those responsibilities, all those things are taken care of or whatever, that we have this time where we focus on God. And are we utilizing that time? What takes our attention away from God? What takes away our focus on God? This week I saw a kind of a humorous video of and it just kind of popped up on my social media feed. Yeah, I look at social media every once in a while just because they have funny puppy videos and humorous things. That's mostly what shows up on my feed. Anyway, so there was this thing where cowbell guy steals the show. And it was basically this guy, and it starts out with this guy. He has a bass guitar, and he's doing this really cool, groovy solo, right? And everybody's kind of jamming out with that and jiving with it. And he looks cool because bass players are cool. And so he's doing this, and then all of a sudden you hear this clink. And it's a cowbell, one note of a cowbell. And suddenly the crowd goes wild. And I'm like, what's going on in this video? And as it turns out, this guy, he has like one, he just hits it once. Not like a whole bunch of times, just once. And the crowd goes wild. And then he's like circling the stage and he's being goofy and he's running around. And then he goes up to the mic and everybody's just kind of waiting in anticipation for him to play that one note. All of a sudden you hear this gonk. And then the crowd goes wild again. I'm like, what is happening in this video? And it's funny because nobody showed up to watch the cowbell guy, did they? Nobody cares about the cowbell guy. But the thing is, everybody went home and they were talking about the cowbell guy because he stole the show. But the thing is, nobody came there to watch the cowbell guy because it's a one-time thing. But they came there to see the talent of the bass player, to see the talent of the band that was there. And I wish I could remember what band. I can't even find the video anymore. It's just popped up, it's gone. But anyway, the thing is, so many times in our lives, we have these moments where it's a really exciting, and we get caught up in the moment of this distraction of something that seems like a lot of fun, and it's exciting, and then we walk away, and we're like, hey, that was a great story. But it's not life building. Right? It's nothing that really means anything. It was one guy with a cowbell playing one note at a time, no talent whatsoever, although he had to have the right timing. And then he would even trick the crowd every once in a while and just pretend to almost play, but didn't actually play it. And then he actually played it, and then it was like, wow. But there's somebody who could work the crowd, who could charm the crowd a little bit more and more. But the thing is, our focus needs to be on the right things. And in that situation, people came there to see the band, not the cowbell guy. And people left wanting to see the band again, not the cowbell guy, right? But so many times we get caught up with the cowbell guy that we forget about the band. We forget about what's really important and why we came and what the focus is and what the loyalties are and what is important in life, just like what's important in the band is not the cowbell necessarily, unless it's a cowbell band, which I don't think exists. But usually a band has something a little more interesting, like the bass guitar and the electric guitar and a person with a really good voice and maybe a piano or an organ or a banjo. I don't know, whatever, right? But sometimes we get so distracted with all the little things that are happening that aren't exactly all that important, but not focused on the right things, the important things. And sometimes we're just focused on the things that are right in front of us as opposed to the bigger picture of what God is doing in the midst of our society, what God is doing in the midst of our world. And so many times there is a pull that idols are usually very attractive and attractional, right? Idols are these things that command our attention, that are very entertaining, that are very appealing, and we feel drawn towards them. And if our faith in God is not in a place where we're feeling strength, where we're seeking God with our lives, where we're knowing God's heart and knowing God well, that so many times we can get pulled away in these other directions and lose our focus on who God is and what God is doing in our lives and the lives of others around us. Sometimes that idol worship can be give us a sense of belonging, that others are participating and inviting us in to worship these certain things that probably are not golden idols, but something that is attractional, something that is important at that time, but not really eternally focused. And so because we want a sense of belonging, a sense of community, sometimes we'll go along with some of these things to be able to participate and to have a sense of camaraderie with those around us, instead of taking a stand and saying, no, that's not what I do. That's not what I'm a part of, because I follow Jesus. And then also there's a sense of loyalty, that if the idol is there enough and we spend enough time with those who are worshiping, or we're worshiping that idol, that there is a loyalty that is required, that we see within this story even, that it requires our behaviors to align and unite with people for that cause. And it may not be the right cause. You see, when Daniel and his friends had to stop participating in what was going on around them, up until then, except for the food being sacrificed to idols, and they said, okay, can you just give us vegetables, right? And they thrived. Remember, that was in Daniel chapter 1. And up until this time, they were essentially looking at the difference between what they don't like. So it's like, I don't like these things. I don't like the fact that they changed my name. I don't like the fact that they wanted us to eat meat and we decided not to eat meat. I don't like the fact that I have to live in exile in Babylon with all these people. But then it came to a place where God forbids what was required of them. God forbids it because it's the first commandment. Have no other gods before me. So suddenly they were in a conundrum. Do we follow God, who created the universe, who does amazing things, who is the God of Nebuchadnezzar, who created Nebuchadnezzar, who put Nebuchadnezzar in place? Do we serve that God who placed him, or do we serve the king? So for them, they decided it was important to serve God. So let's read on. Verse 8. At this time, some of the astrologers came forward and denounced the Jews. They said to King Nebuchadnezzar, may the king live forever. Your majesty has issued a decree that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipe, and all kinds of music must fall down and worship the image of God. And that whoever does not fall down and worship will be thrown into the blazing furnace. But there are some Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who pay no attention to you, your majesty. They neither serve your gods nor worship the image of gold you have set up. Furious with rage, Nebuchadnezzar summoned Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. I don't know where Daniel is at this point. Maybe he was like at a conference out of town or something like that. But somehow he doesn't make it into this story. Lucky guy. So these men were brought before the king, and Nebuchadnezzar said to them, Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the image of gold I have set up? Now, when you hear the sound of the horn, flute, zither, lyre, harp, pipe, and all kinds of music, if you are ready to fall down and worship the image I made, very good. But if you do not worship it, you will be thrown immediately into the blazing furnace. Then what God will be able to rescue you from my hand? Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to him, King Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to deliver us from it, and he will deliver us from your majesty's hand. But even if he does not, we want you to know, your majesty, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold you have set up. So here's that testing, right? Here's that testing that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego have to go through. And they were called out, and they were tested to be able to say, okay, look, guys, here's the thing. You either worship this God or you're going to be put in that fiery furnace. Those are the two options. And they're like, you know what? let it be. Let it be. And they had accusations from their colleagues saying, hey, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they're not doing what you said people need to do. And so you need to put them in the furnace. And then King Nebuchadnezzar gives them a second chance. Now, normally a king would not give them a second chance. But here the king decides that I'm going to give them a second chance, probably because they're friends of Daniel. And he already respects Daniel. But these guys, he's still unsure about them. So he's like, okay, guys, one more chance. One more chance to bow down. But they didn't, because they went into the presence of the king with resolve that no matter what happens, I am going to follow God, not gods. I will not bow down to the idols that are set before me. And the thing about it is that when God's law is 100% clear, we have to obey it. We have to obey it. And sometimes when I'm like, okay, what am I supposed to do in this situation? I remember my Oma. Oh, she was awesome. I love my Oma. She passed away years and years ago. And I always remember her favorite hymn, trust and obey. Trust and obey, for there's no other way to be happy in Jesus but to trust and obey. See, those are words that are timeless, absolutely timeless, because there are times where we are tested. There are times where we're asked or we're manipulated, and it's usually much more subtle than this situation, to compromise our beliefs. But any time we compromise our beliefs, we violate that command. Trust and obey. Trust and obey. There's no other way to be happy in Jesus. And so when God's law is clear, we need to do what it says. And this is a reminder for us, even if there's a cost that may come. So verse 19, then Nebuchadnezzar was furious with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and his attitude toward them changed. He ordered the furnace heated 7 times hotter than usual. So this guy's mad. He gave them a second chance and they did not take it. Now he's really mad, like steaming mad, no pun intended. And he commanded some of the strongest soldiers in his army to tie them up, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and throw them into the blazing furnace. So these men, wearing their robes, trousers, turbans, and other clothes, were bound and thrown into the blazing furnace. The king's command was so urgent and the furnace so hot that the flames of the fire killed the soldiers who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these 3 men, firmly tied, fell into the blazing fire. Then King Nebuchadnezzar leaped to his feet in amazement and asked his advisors, weren't there 3 men that we tied up and threw into the fire? And they replied, certainly, your majesty, he said. Look, I see 4 men walking around in the fire, unbound and unharmed, and the 4th looks like a son of the gods. Nebuchadnezzar then approached the opening of the blazing furnace and shouted, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High God, come out, come here. So Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the fire, and the satraps, prefects, governors, and royal advisors crowded around them. They saw that the fire had not harmed their bodies, nor was the hair of their heads singed, their robes were not scorched, and there was no smell of fire on them. So they were put into the fire. It was super hot. Guards were killed just by being near the fire. And there's no reason why Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego would not be consumed by the fire. And then we see how there's 4 in the fire, not 3. 4. And how it seems like that was the Spirit of God or God's presence, or it might have even been Jesus that was in the fire with them to comfort them, to help them understand, hey, guys, it's okay. You see that fire? Yeah. You feel the fire? No. That's because I'm here. We're okay. We're okay. This is so that God can show his power. And there are times that God has done this throughout scriptures and even throughout history, that he's shown his power over all of the earthly dominions that exist. And he reckons what happens around us. And he reckons what's happening to us. And it doesn't always happen this way, because sometimes we don't see how God is redeeming situations. And sometimes he doesn't step into situations of risk or of danger. And I don't know why he doesn't do that for his people. But in this case, he did. Now, I don't know about you, but for me, I enjoy barbecuing. I barbecue all year round. And I think it's just great. I got a gas barbecue just so I could barbecue outside in minus 30. But the thing about the barbecue is that sometimes it gets a little hot or you get a little too close and you get this funky smell because it's like, wow, where'd all the hair on my hand go? Right? And you get a little singed. And it doesn't take a lot of heat for hair to just melt and smell funky. It's a horrible smell. I do not like that. But for these guys, not even a hair on their head was singed. That doesn't take much. To be absolutely clean, like their robes were not touched or scorched. They were no longer bound, but their robes were not scorched. And they didn't even smell like smoke. Now, here's the thing. I don't know if you guys have seen these advertisements for smokeless fire pits. Isn't that awesome? I'm like, man, they did it. They figured it out, how to make a smokeless fire pit. It's a lie. It doesn't exist. We bought one, and like, yeah, it's cool. It's got like kind of a backdraft thing, and the fire, and the smoke kind of goes straight up. And as long as you keep it fed at a certain heat, it kind of works. There's still smoke. Like, come on, what were we thinking, right? Of course there's going to be smoke. And so it kind of works, and then it gets to a certain temperature and drops, and then there's smoke. And it's very frustrating. And it's really hard to be around a fire, especially if it's a wood fire, without smelling like smoke. And yet here is the miracle. They didn't even smell like smoke. And that almost seems like God's showing off at this point, right? So it's like, yeah, if you were standing anywhere near that furnace, you would smell like smoke. But they don't even smell like smoke. Their robes were not dirty. Nothing was touched so that there could be no question that God spared their lives. And that's the power of God in his role. And we need to be people of hope, people of prayer in the midst of all the things that are happening throughout our world, because God can do things like this. And this is small. This is small compared to what he can do. Last week we talked about how God is still on the throne. And if God is still on the throne, then it doesn't matter who's in charge here because God is still on the throne. And we worry and we pray and we anticipate and we have anxieties about what's happening around in the world if we're paying attention. But the fact of the matter is that God is still on the throne and we still know the end of the story. We still know the end of the story. So verse 28. Nebuchadnezzar said, "Praise be to the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and rescued his servants. They trusted him and defied the king's command and were willing to give up their lives rather than serve or worship any god except their own God. Therefore, I decree that the people of any nation or language who say anything against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be cut into pieces and their houses be turned into piles of rubble, for no other god can save in this way." Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. So, even though he's quite violent still, Nebuchadnezzar finally gets it. He understands which God is the God. And it's a kind of an exciting time because they have this sense of salvation in the kingdom of Babylon. And he finally figures out, okay, so Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, those guys know what they're talking about. Those guys know the God that is the most powerful, the only God that exists. Because here is a miracle that cannot be refuted, a miracle that cannot be ignored. They were rescued from fire. There was a demonstration and it was hot, but the effects of the furnace were not even evident. There was glory not to Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and their gods, but to God. All the glory came to God. And if Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were asked or tested at any point, they would have said, no, it is about God. It's not about us. And finally, that change, that repentance came and the change of the king happened. And sometimes what we need to ask ourselves is, are there risks that we need to take every once in a while when it comes to taking a stand or when it comes to living our lives with integrity, making good decisions, doing the right thing even when it's hard? Because sometimes when we have faith and we add risk, what happens is we see the power of God and the results of God within our lives and the lives of others. It's not always immediate. Sometimes it takes generations for it to happen, but there will be results when we follow God, even when it's hard. So just some questions for us to ponder. First of all, what's the idol of our time? What idols are you facing, are tempted, are you drawn towards in this world? What do you see around you? And essentially, it's things that are placed above God. It might be your use of time. It might be your focus. It might be your loyalties. It might be things that you're tempted to compromise in. What are the idols that you are facing and the idols of our time? Secondly, how can you resist the pull of focus away from God? How can you resist the pull? Because they're very attractive, aren't they? And it's easy to get sucked in. How can you better resist that? Thirdly, how do I need to grow my faith to be able to have the strength to follow Jesus at any cost? And finally, what is one step you can take to strengthen your faith, to strengthen your faith? Will you pray with me? God, we just thank you for the example of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and how in the face of dangers that we pray we'll never have to face, God, that they stood with you, that they would not compromise the faith that they had committed to. And it's not even the faith they committed to, but the God they were committed to, which is you. And the beauty of it is, even though this was thousands of years ago, you're the same God, the creator, the sustainer, the savior, the influencer. And that through your Holy Spirit, you empower us in our own small worlds that we exist in. Lord, you empower us in supernatural ways that when we are tested, that when we are tried, that when we are on the hot seat, Lord, that you would help us to grow our faith, our loyalty to you in such a way that when we face challenges asking us to compromise or to do things that we don't agree with, that go against your laws and your will in our lives, Lord, that we would stand. That we would be people of action, that would be firm in what we believe. So God, that no matter what happens out there, Lord, that in our hearts, we hold to you. We worship you.